Political Pulse is made possible by listeners and by Lee Auto Malls, offering new and used vehicles to help Mainers explore the beauty of their home state. Learn more at leeauto.com.
This is Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz, along with Maine Public's Chief Political Correspondent Steve Missler and Senior Political Correspondent Mal Leary. Well, by the time you hear this, you'll be able to count on two hands how many days are left before Election Day, maybe even one hand. Well, Steve and Mal join me now to talk about the home stretch politicking, and we'll start with Vice President Mike Pence's visit to Maine. Steve, he chose to speak in Hermon outside Bangor in Maine's 2nd District. Is that all the Trump campaign thinks it can win here at this point?
Yeah, it would appear so, Erwin. You know, they've been targeting that 2nd Congressional District and that single electoral vote for quite some time, as you know. But it's a little bit different than in 2016, where the president himself showed up nearly a half dozen times. And at least one of those was in the 1st Congressional District. I believe his first visit was actually in Portland. This one, it was in Hermon. What was notable about it, at least to me, was that the language that the vice president used was very, very much base motivated language. He wasn't really speaking to a statewide audience. And that may be because Joe Biden is leading statewide in double digits. And maybe they're just sort of conceding the state to Joe Biden and just really aiming for that 2nd Congressional District electoral vote. What was also interesting, though, was Mike Pence was talking. He spent a lot of time focusing on the courts, which of course is a central issue in the U.S. Senate race. And Mike Pence was talking about how they had delivered conservative judges to the federal judiciary up and down from the high court all the way down to federal district courts. That is exactly the opposite message that Susan Collins wants to say in her race. She's been very critical of Sarah Gideon for Gideon having described these judges as far-right conservative judges. But Mike Pence was describing him exactly that way in his visit and taking great pride in that. And so, you know, and the other thing too, of course, is that Mike Pence never mentioned Susan Collins. He did mention Dale Crafts, who's running as the Republican candidate in that district, challenging Democrat Jared Golden. Paul LePage, former governor of the state, did mention Susan Collins and basically said that, you know, we need to keep her there, because we need to keep a Republican Senate if Trump is reelected to help pass his agenda, which of course is feeds right into the Democrats' narrative about Susan Collins, that she's basically in, you know, lockstep with Donald Trump. So very interesting messaging from the vice president. I'm not sure that it was all that helpful to Susan Collins, but, you know, maybe it does help her in that district in particular, but it certainly won't help her in the first district.
Mal?
I don't think there's any question that the whole Pence visit was aimed at that one single electoral vote. All the public polling that we've seen shows Trump either up a little bit or down a little bit in the 2nd Congressional District, where he won it by 10 points last time. And if you look at some of the scenarios that are being spun out by the analysts across the country, Maine keeps coming up with that single electoral vote as maybe the one vote that tips the scales in the Electoral College. That's why you're still getting a lot of attention for one electoral vote. I thought it very interesting that Paul LePage spent a lot of time talking about the entire Republican ticket, as opposed to Mike Pence, who came in basically seeking votes for he and for Trump. He actually is the only one who bring up Susan Collins. So it's a very interesting split in messaging that's been going on among branches, if you will, of the Republican Party. But historically, this is not new. I mean, if you go way back to the history here, there was a real split back in 1994 where you had Bill Cohen supporting Susan Collins in the gubernatorial primary, and which she managed to eke out the most closest of wins to, of course, go on to be defeated. That split is now more of a conservative moderate split, as opposed to the moderates fighting over who would have control.
One last thing I would just add to, if you look nationally, there's been some interesting analysis from Dave Wasserman in particular from the Cook Political Report, He's gone to some of these battleground districts throughout the country and is suggests that Trump is in trouble with some of these places that he handily carried in 2016. Of course, the second congressional district in Maine is one of those. You know, as Mal mentioned, the president won that by 10 points. Well, it's a lot closer now. That closeness is being replicated in other states too. You could speculate that one of the other reasons that the vice president was really tailoring his message to the base is that they want to make sure these people turn out. I don't know if they're detecting a lack of enthusiasm or they're worried that the vice president, Joe Biden, has started to reestablish support in some of these areas where Hillary Clinton was unable to carry it. I mean, that's the other thing. We've talked about this a number of times in the second congressional district. Obama carried that district handily twice. It wasn't until Trump in 2016 came in and won it by 10 points that we started talking about it as if it was this deep red territory. I'm not convinced that it is.
Pence did give that shout out to second district congressional candidate Dale Crafts, who also introduced him. We did host a debate this week between Crafts and the Democratic incumbent Jared Golden. Mal, how did they do?
Well, I think it was pretty much expected positions from both of them. I, of course, did a lot of the interviews on Maine Calling with the candidates, so I'd heard a lot of the answers before in various forms. And Dale Crafts is sticking to the Republican talking points out of Washington in terms of major issues. And where he's gotten some help from the national groups, it's been to attack Jared Golden, of all people, as some sort of radical liberal. Well, I certainly think that Jared Golden is to the left of Dale Crafts, but I would hardly call him some sort of radical liberal. They stated out their points, but I think when you look at it as a whole, the more polished of the two was the incumbent. Jared Golden, who has been through this before when he won the seat in 2018, just seemed to be more polished with his answers. He was more reasoned with his arguments, sometimes saying, you know, I just can't, I know you want me to give you a figure, but I just can't because it really depends on so many different factors, you know, and to me, that was a much more reasoned answer than traditional answers we got from Dale Crafts.
Mal and I, at several points, tried to drill down into what Dale Crafts wanted, say, in a COVID relief bill, specific policies, that sort of thing. There just wasn't much of an answer there, you know, even in terms of the size of this COVID relief package, which is, a real source of tension between the White House and Republicans, because the White House is actually more in line with what the Democrats want. They want a bigger package. But Republicans, particularly those in the Senate, don't want that. They're already getting ready for 2021 when they pivot back to austerity. That's probably the position they'll hold if Joe Biden is to become president. They're going to be suddenly become interested in the deficit again, which is not something they were interested in when they passed that big tax cut in 2017. Conversely, you know, Jared Golden, what we saw is further evidence that he's also moving away from this position that he took in 2018, I believe, where he was a very big proponent of Medicare for all. Like, he is moving away from that. He's drifting more towards what I guess is maybe the more mainstream Democratic position, which is more of a public option into Medicare. His reasoning for that was basically that some people like their private insurance and they should be able to keep it, which is a talking point we're hearing from Sarah Gideon in the U.S. Senate race. We're hearing that from Joe Biden too at the top of the ticket.
Well, there was also a first district debate between the incumbent Democrat, Shelley Pingree, and Republican Dr. Jay Allen. Part of a campaign, Steve Mistler, that so far has been very, very quiet.
Yeah, real quiet. I mean, there's no money really coming into it. I don't even know that Shelley spent very much on anything. I don't even know if she's run an ad, to be honest with you. If she has, I haven't seen it. You know, all the polling that we've seen from that race suggests that she's got a very comfortable lead, although have been surprised at some of the polls showing that Jared Golden might have a bigger lead over Dale Crafts. And we thought that was going to be a much tighter race than it has been. You know, the debate was not terribly surprising. I mean, Jay Allen is a super far right, very pro-Trump, which is a very difficult candidate to be in that particular district where the president is way underwater. Voters in the first congressional district do not have a high opinion of the president. And so to be running as a pro-Trump candidate in that district as a House candidate is tough, but Jay Allen is, that's where he's going, that he's sticking to that. He's looking for the Trump base to the extent that it exists in that district. And that's what he talked about. You know, his talking points and his positions very much echoed or mirrored the president's on a lot of issues. And they actually were even further right to the president in a lot of instances too. So not a lot of surprises there. I mean, and Shelley Pingree was, you know, there was a lot of back and forth with them in the beginning of the debate, especially around the president's response to the pandemic, mask wearing and all these precautions, which Jay Allen has made central to his campaign, making them an issue about freedom. Shelley Pingree was very quick to point out that these are not choices just about freedom. They're about responsibility and taking care of not just you, but other people. She was very tough on him in the beginning, but she also, you know, pulled some Jedi mind trick stuff with him in the interactive, as we like to call it, where the candidates were allowed to ask one another questions. I mean, she was asking Jay Allen about his affinity for monarch butterflies or something. And, you know, by the end of the debate, when everybody was off camera, the two of them were talking about genealogy and butterflies again. You know, it was just knitting. You know, it was interesting because, you know, I think Pingree knew going in that Jay Allen, you know, he runs a little hot, just like Mark Holbrook did in 2018. And she was effectively able to disarm him in a lot of ways just by being nice. It seemed to kind of have an effect on the second half of the debate, quite frankly.
Finally, Republicans seem to have found a counter to those bogus Trump Collins campaign signs the Democrats have paid for. So we're now seeing some that say, vote Sarah Gideon, defund the police. Mal?
Disinformation in the old-fashioned way of campaigns. That is, these are roadside signs, as opposed to the same kind of messaging that's in those signs showing up on social media. You know, we've been bombarded on social media with allegations for and against both of the candidates. To me, this was just one more step that they've decided, well, we've got so much money, we might as well print up some signs too. It's very clear now that this race is going to set such a huge record for spending. I'm not sure they can spend all the money they have in this last few days of the campaign. So you see them coming up with some of these little tricky items with these signs, and we'll probably see some more of them before Election Day. They have run out of room on television. I know they pretty much seem to have run out of room on radio, and even the social media platforms can't handle much more. It's something we see every campaign. It's just a different form this time.
And this particular ad was obviously retaliation for Democrats putting up these Trump Collins signs in the first congressional district. I don't think the Republicans have any objection to Trump Collins signs in the second congressional district. But in the first, they've got a problem with that because, you know, they don't want Collins to be linked so closely with the president. Well, the Republicans said, if you support defunding the police, vote for Sarah Gideon. That was their retaliation, which, of course, Sarah Gideon does not support that position. Sure, her position is in line with Joe Biden's, but that doesn't stop election politics from taking place and making claims that just simply aren't true. But they've got extra money to spend, apparently, and that's how they're spending it.
And that's Maine's Political Pulse for this week. A reminder, we update the Pulse podcast each Friday. Steve Mistler also prepares a Maine's Political Pulse newsletter, which is usually out on Friday mornings. You can have that emailed to you if you like. And you can find both the newsletter and the podcast at mainepublic.org, our website. Podcast, of course, wherever you download your podcasts. We do air most of the Political Pulse podcast on Sunday's weekend edition, some excerpts on Monday's morning edition. And of course, we'll be joining you again in about a week. Our producer is Willis Ryder Arnold. Our music is by Rob Holt. I'm Erwin Gratz. We'll talk to you then.